children are entitled to a relationship with both of their parents, and they're entitled to know who they are.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute talking about her presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And if you take that entitlement as basic and reason backwards from that, what you'll end up with is the whole traditional Christian sexual morality. Get married, stay married, and only have sex with the person you're married to.
You can meet and hear Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse making the case against the sexual revolution at the Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120 and includes three meals. Child care is free. For more information, look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston. For, as an outsider looking in on something like this, it's hard for me to understand. I was recently over in Forest Park, which is a large park in the St. Louis area, built and largely around a World's Fair. And there's a statue there to St. Louis. Well, that makes perfect sense. St. Louis, he's astride a horse. I think he's ready for battle or something like that. And I think it's only a matter of time before some probably smarter or not as smart as they think they are group of university students decide that he is ripe for punishment. At least his effigy is ripe for punishment. Maybe a little vandalism, maybe even tear the thing down, which would be tough. It's expensive, and we're going to have to find a place to put it unless we're going to melt the whole thing down. And it's happening to monument and statue and monument all over the country. Why is it happening? What's the explanation? If the explanation is, well, these people were racist or they were imperialists, don't we eventually have to take every statue down to great men who all probably at one time or another fit that bill? Joining us to talk about the desecration of political monuments and the transgender agenda for our schools, Joy Pullman, a mother of four, managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of American Kids, and recent columns, Vandals Are Destroying Monuments Because They've Been Taught to Hate America, and The Trans Juggernaut, Once Your Kids and Public Schools Are Just the Beginning. Joy Pullman, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you.
Joy, often we're told lately that these monuments are being desecrated or removed because the people that they portray or the events that they portray are racist. What makes these kind of protests and actions different from the civil rights movement in America?
Well, there's a number of really key differences, but I think it, you know, the obvious one is nonviolence. You know, the civil rights movement was functioning within America's promise to all of its people of equality, of equal justice for all, and was saying, look, you're not living up to this promise. And they nonviolently, in accord with our laws and peacefully, protested until society said, look, you know, the rest of America said, look, you're right. You know, what's happening is wrong. We're going to make changes through our normal legal processes to handle this injustice. And that's not happening with, you know, the immolations of statues and public monuments around the country in the name of anti-racism. You know, vandalism is a crime for a reason. You know, those monuments, either on public or private property, belong to someone, you know, either the people of, you know, whatever city or, you know, a private person. And it, the way that we solve questions in America is not through marching around punching at things. Well, I guess that's not the way we should solve things. We solve it through public discourse. We come together, we discuss it, we vote, and that's how we solve these questions. So if people think that there's something wrong with these statues, they're insulting, they should be taken down, they need to go through the normal processes and not just march around acting like little petty tyrants who have the right to decide for everyone else in their community what should be on public display.
Why is this really happening? What is really behind the impetus to remove the monuments of American history?
Well, I think, one, it's ignorance. Because, I mean, and there's all kinds, it's easy to say that, but it actually is really backed up by hard data. I mean, we have seen on various measures of K-12 students, national tests, private tests, private surveys. American civic and historical knowledge is extremely low and has been declining for decades. So we know as a people very little about history. We don't know almost anything about Columbus, Christopher Columbus, you know, or Abraham Lincoln or George Washington. And in fact, if we know anything, it's, you know, the fact that, oh, they, you know, they were racists, you know, or slave traders or whatever. When that may be true, but there's so much more context and history behind these people's stories and what they contributed to, you know, equality and to, you know, you and I and everyone else in our society today. So ignorance is behind it. But also, I think the other thing behind it is just a straight up hatred for America, which is fueled by ignorance, as well as people who, some people don't know about America, and that's why they hate it, because they're told things, they're not told the full truth, they're told lies. But other people know the truth about America, and they hate it because they do not like, you know, America's system of government. They do not think that people should be capable or are capable of self-government. They think that some people are born booted and spurred, ready to ride. And so for that reason, they're fomenting this discord, and because they directly oppose what America stands for and what our history tells about us, and in contrast with the rest of the world.
But is it sadly ironic that the very generation of academics who, to put it bluntly, taught them to hate America and everything it represents, good, bad, mm-hmm. and ugly, okay, both the good and the bad, they enjoy their positions of influence largely because of what America actually is, what America has become through the historical events that these kids seem to want to erase from our landscape.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, you know, I write about this in the piece, but the civil rights movement could not have had a common ground on which to make their arguments to Americans about, you know, the equality that our fellow citizens deserve, regardless of their color or their race. They could not have made that argument to an America that was not founded on principles of, you know, all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with inalienable rights. So if we didn't believe that, which, you know, that fundamental statement that animated our Declaration as well as our Constitution, you know, there would have been, you know, much more, there would have been, we wouldn't have had a way to come together and agree and fulfill that promise that we made to all our citizens. So, yes, you know, the man who wrote those words was a slaveholder. That's Thomas Jefferson. And, yes, he, you know, I think it is appropriate to condemn, you know, that sin of his participation in that system and so forth. But at the same time, you know, look, we are all sinners. And if we are always going to be tearing down people, if they ever do the slightest thing that, you know, is easy for us to knock down today because those people paid with their blood to eradicate that system, and so we get to enjoy that with really ourselves not having to pay for it, that's just really a very narrow-minded way to look at human nature, at history, and the rest of the world.
Virtually no one survives this kind of a thing. I mean, you mentioned Abraham Lincoln.
I certainly wouldn't. But, and I feel like I've lived a pretty clean life, but, you know, if people knew everything about me, I would never be, you know, anywhere. I would be ashamed to show my face anywhere. I think everyone would, if we were being honest.
You had mentioned Abraham Lincoln, and if they actually studied the history of Lincoln's ideas about slavery, he would quickly run afoul. We'd have to get rid of that enormous, beautiful monument to him on the Washington Mall, because he wasn't as clean as the driven snow in the way he thought about Black people.
Absolutely. I mean, his ideas were avant-garde for his day, but today they're antiquated, you know. He was right at the forefront. He was pushing the whole entire country in a direction that, again, we all benefit from today. But again, today, you know, we've come so much farther in applying his ideas and the founding principles to more of our daily life. You know, that you're right. You know, if you looked at what Lincoln actually said, it, you know, would quite frankly seem racist, and it was racist. But, you know, that's the way that humankind, quote unquote, evolves, right? We have to have, you know, an America 1.0 to get a 2.0, to get a 3.0. And if you don't allow, you know, for those sorts of, you know, periods in human history from which we grow, it's kind of like saying to everyone, you have to stay like a baby, you know? Imagine if we all stayed as our earliest version of ourselves, it wouldn't really be that great either. So condemning, you know, societies for being what they almost could not help being, given the times that they were in, is, again, it's really narrow-minded and ignorant.
One other question on that before we take a break, and that is, how do we, since you spend so much time thinking about education, how do we rightly educate our kids about both the great ideas and achievements of the men and women of American history and their faults and their warts?
Well, I think I'm a firm believer in telling people the truth, but there's also, you know, the reality that we, you know, younger children can handle less of the grim parts of truth than older and more mature children, you know? So when the children start out young, you're going to tell them more of the nicer things and more of the kind of more prominent things. And then once they get older, it's kind of like I have some experience painting. So when you're painting, you know, what you do is you start out by filling in the sketches, the outline, you know, the background. And so then you gradually add more color on top of that. And, you know, as you're building up the painting, you put in more detail and you put in more depth and dimension. And that's kind of how it should be, you know, with young people. You start with a sketch and you gradually fill it in as they grow older.
When we come back, we're going to turn to the subject of the transgender agenda for our schools. Of course, the transgender agenda has found its way into public schools. And if you think, not my private school, not my charter school, not my home school, well, stay tuned.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to, you know, help them to get a sense of, A, you know, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joy Pullman is our guest, managing editor of The Federalist. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the transgender agenda for our schools. But first, Joy, what is Rod Dreher's law of merited impossibility?
So Rod Dreher is a blogger, a writer, an author, an editor at the American Conservative. And so he writes a lot about sexual revolution issues. He's a faithful Orthodox Christian. And so he's developed this law over years, and it's been, he posts on his blog regularly when appropriate. His law of merited impossibility is that will never happen, and when it does, you bigots will deserve it.
So how does it apply to what we were told would never, ever happen and what has happened with respect to Obergefell, the Supreme Court decision, and the transgender agenda?
We were told, you know, before the Supreme Court required all states to solemnize gay marriages, that basically how could anyone really object to what two consenting adults are doing alone in their bedrooms? You know, what's your problem? It doesn't affect you. Get off it. Just let people live their lives. so, you know, and then when people said, well, wow, you know, making this change is going to have to affect a lot of areas of law just because marriage is the central institution of society, talking about adoption, talking about school policies, sex ed, you know, you name it, something that touches on it. You know, there were all kinds of arguments, you know, that Christians, that folks who care about natural law were making that would be the consequences of this. And they were told, you know, as Jura points out, that will never happen. What a ridiculous thing. It's a slippery slope, so on and so on. But then, you know, of course, once that became reality through that court decision, you know, then these things have become, you know, very swiftly to materialize into reality. So everything that we were told was preposterous to even think of. Now we're told is, you know, a social justice issue and you're a bigot if you don't get on board, you know, with, you know, for example, you know, teaching kindergartners that boys can turn into girls and girls can turn into boys.
So why the kids? I mean, it's got to be expensive enough, and it's got to be hard work enough to simply try and either convince or coerce adults to buy into this. Why the kids?
Well, I mean, kids don't know anything, right? They're easy prey. You know, children are always a prime target of people who want to enforce social change. If you just think about, you know, the communists targeted children, fascists targeted children, and the Nazis targeted children, and it's for a very good reason. You know, children don't know anything. They receive wisdom and instruction from their parents, and it takes many years, a very long process of, you know, becoming an adult, able to, you know, have the ability to make decisions based on knowing something. And so if you take a child when they are small, they're much more likely to believe you. And not only that, it will be much more difficult to shake kind of the foundational ideas within a child that he or she has grown up hearing and thinking are just kind of central to the world.
So this isn't just planning for the future. This is low-hanging fruit.
Oh, I mean, yes. I mean, you know, children are not only an easy target, but also if I have preschoolers, I have a pack of small children, and they dress up as the other sex all the time. You know, we have a big dress-up basket. You know, my boys are wearing girl clothes, my girls are wearing boy clothes, and it doesn't mean anything. They're just having fun, right? So if I, as a parent, were to say, oh, my goodness, you know, you know, little Sam wants to be a girl because he's wearing a dress, and started, you know, talking with my child about this. They're so suggestible. I mean, anyone who has little kids will, you know, they're suggestible. It would be kind of this fun plaything that we would do for a while, and then it would be reinforced and ingrained and so on and so forth. So it grows and metastasizes. So that also provides a really good inlet for those who want to basically prove that their ideology is true when they have very little evidence to prove it, because look, you know, children have not reached puberty yet. They look more androgynous. You know, the testosterone has not made the jawline part. You know, it hasn't pulled out, you know, the muscles on the boys. You know, the estrogen, you know, the girls don't have their cycles yet, so on and so forth. And so little children look a lot more trans. They're easier to pose as the other sex. And again, if you get those kids and you're administering them cross-sex hormones when they're small, they will never hit puberty and they will be infertile for life. So basically, they're locked into this, you know, this basically this kind of construct for their life, and it's impossible for them to fully back out. So then you have, you know, these test cases available to be able to parade in front of the media. They look good. They look a lot better than a giant 6'4" bearded tranny guy, you know, and people feel a lot more compassion because they're small. So it's a PR stunt as well as kind of trying to confirm all the things that they're telling us and don't have evidence for yet.
Finally, with only about a minute here, what is, to put it bluntly, the totalitarian goal behind this?
Well, I think the very short thing is that the whole sexual revolution, LGBT kind of agenda, is aimed directly at separating children from their parents. I mean, we have, you know, law and policies now established that, you know, schools will not talk with parents if they will not disclose to parents if their kids are getting medical care to transition, if they think that they're a different gender. And there are even some laws that are in place forbidding, you know, psychologists, schools, health officials from discussing that with parents. And we're talking about 9, 10, 11-year-old, you know, kids. This isn't even kids with puberty. So this is directly a wedge to try to atomize children away from their protectors, from people who love them deeply and who are most likely to be committed to their well-being and also most likely to stand up against their children being emotionally and physically mutilated.
Joy Pullman is a mother of four, managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and recent columns Vandals Are Destroying Monuments Because They've Taught to Hate America, and The Trans Juggernaut Wants Your Kids in Public Schools Are Just the Beginning. You'll find links to these columns under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joy mentioned that Rod Dreher is very influential in the blogging world. He's going to be making the case for his idea of the Benedict option at the 2017 Fall Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. It includes three meals. Child care is free, courtesy of the Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education. And you can find out more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. It's the Fall Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., part 8 of our series on responding to Roman Catholic proof text today, does 1 Corinthians 3:15 teach the idea of purgatory? Professor Stephen Parks of Concordia University, Irvine, California, will be our guest. Then we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson on Peter's reinstatement in John chapter 21 with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.